It's time for Hogue Health Radio, brought to you by Hogue Memorial Hospital Presbyterian, Orange County's top hospital. And now, here's Deborah Howell.
Cheers, and welcome back to the show. So glad you could spare a few minutes to spend with us today. On the show today, I have the incredible pleasure of having Dr. Daniel Banderi with me. Dr. Banderi is the director of the Multiple Sclerosis Center at Hogue Neurosciences Institute, and he brings an incredible amount of knowledge to the table today. So if you have a friend or a family member who has MS, please call them up and tell them they might want to listen today. Welcome, Dr. Banderi.
Thank you very much, Deborah. It's been a pleasure.
Let's leap right into it because there's a lot to cover. Are there different causes of multiple sclerosis?
Excellent question. And I think one of the key factors to understand, yes and no. So MS is what we call multifactorial disease. It means that there is not one particular cause that brings multiple sclerosis to the population. We have discovered as a neuroimmunologist that a combination of prior exposures to infectious diseases as a child, for example, also environmental factor. For example, there have been studies that looked at the population who live, let's say, in the northern latitude compared to people who live in lower latitude or closer to the equator, and found out that there was about 1 to 2% higher risk of multiple sclerosis than the people who were born, let's say, in the northern latitude part of the United States compared to people who were born in New Mexico. The reason for that we really don't clearly understand, but the hypothetical elements has been things such as the exposure to the sun, the direction of the sun and radiation, all of those things. So that would be the second possible culprit.
Okay.
And the third one, which is also very important in my opinion, and it's been part of the work that we have done both when I was at USC and also currently, is the genetic causes. So we have discovered that MS does have genetic component to it.
Okay.
It is not what you would call absolutely genetically transmitted disease. So that means when somebody has multiple sclerosis, that doesn't necessarily mean that their children or the grandchildren would have MS, but it certainly increased the proportion and possible risk of MS in their progenies and offspring. So far, there have been at least five genes that we have discovered in multiple sclerosis, which right now these are all in the midst of being evaluated after the Human Genome Project was completed about 5-6 years ago.
Yes.
So this has been one of the most exciting era in multiple sclerosis research next to stem cell research, for example, that we're doing.
So, that was my next question, but please go ahead.
So the genetic aspect of the disease is something that it's becoming more and more topic of the scientific discussion. And whenever we attend academy meetings or research meeting in multiple sclerosis nationally and internationally, this topic has been discovered and elaborated more. And hopefully over the next 5 to 10 years, we will have much more data available with that.
Sure. So right now, though, you have these five genes that are sensitive to MS or that represent MS. Or tell me more about that.
So these five genes are the genes that we have noticed that exist in a higher percentage in multiple sclerosis patients compared to the general population.
So that's what you're looking for when a patient comes in.
Right now, at this time, we are not actually. So the genetic component of the MS is not something that could be routinely or commercially tested today.
I see.
But that's
one
thing that we're hoping over the next 2 or 3 years, there will be availability of these genetic tests routinely in our offices. But for the time being, these are mainly academic.
And that would be an incredible breakthrough, right?
Absolutely. At least what it does, it would allow us to be able to predict what particular medication will work in a particular patient with that genetic presentation.
Wow, a huge leap forward. You spoke briefly about stem cell research in relationship to MS. Let's get into that topic a little bit.
Absolutely. So stem cell, as you know, it's been a topic of controversy, at the same time topic of hope when it comes to any diseases, including neurological diseases. So there have been multiple centers who have been working on Alzheimer's, Parkinson, and multiple sclerosis and finding whether the stem cell transplant or stem cell project would work. Multiple sclerosis is something that we have been working on for the past probably 5 or 6 years also to find out whether through stem cell we might be able to repair some of the nerves that have been damaged as a result of multiple sclerosis, will be able to make the cells which are basically being attacked as a result of MS, which normally produce that protective myelin covering. So what we have done in our laboratory so far, we have been able to make molecules, or we have make cells, which in turn, hopefully in the future, will be able to repair some of these myelin loss. And that is one of the biggest projects we're working on.
Would they adhere or bind to the myelin sheath?
And That is something that we're still working on. One thing, Deborah, we need to understand is that stem cell, even though it's very exciting, but a stem cell, it also a very dangerous molecule. So a stem cell is the primordial, it's the beginning cells of every cells in the body. Mm-hmm. And a stem cell could be converted to anything, including nerves, hair, heart, eyes. That's why different projects going on to be able to manipulate the stem cells to convert them to a particular tissue or organ. In the laboratories, what we have been able to do so far, we have been able to make some of these cells to become a type of cell, which we call, they call them oligodendrocytes. And these are the actual cells that make the myelin. So you're actually, in turn, making the factory with the stem cell that, in turn, makes the myelin. And based on that, how does that get implemented in the body, whether it's through migration into the cells or getting infused? These are the projects that we're working on so far.
Fantastic. And I hear that stem cells are very smart and they know where to go and when to go.
Well, hopefully. But one precautionary advice that I always do to the patient is that there's a very fine line between a stem cell becoming an appropriate tissue or becoming a cancer cell. And that is one of the reasons that we, as researchers, we are extremely careful, especially on an academic basis, to make sure we know where the timeline would be to stop the division of these cells.
Yes.
And that's something that the FDA has rightfully great regulations on.
Okay, so let's go now to the other end of the spectrum. That's the future. What happens before MS? What are the major symptoms of MS?
So multiple sclerosis is a disease that could present with a variety of symptoms. Anything from weakness, numbness, vision problem, speech problem, gait problem, emotional issues, including psychological and psychosocial issues, as well as things such as bowel or bladder problems. But in majority of the cases, there are three categories of the symptoms that are igniting symptoms of MS or the beginning. One is what we call optic neuritis or visual disturbance that takes place. The second one are what we call paresthesias or numbness. And that could be anywhere from just one limb numbness all the way to the right side of the body being completely numb and tingling. Mm-hmm. Some patients describe it as pins and needles. Some people describe it as I can't feel it properly. So there are a variety of the descriptions.
Okay.
And the third one is what we call weakness, actual muscular weakness that could present. And these are all different with different stages and with different degree of the presentation. Now, MS could also present itself at some portion with, as I said, psychological issues, including mood disturbance. Depression, for example, is one of the symptoms of multiple sclerosis.
Okay.
Mood changes are also one of the symptoms of multiple sclerosis. Cognitive issues have been known to be extremely notorious, especially in untreated or late-treated MS. Because if you remember at the beginning, we were talking about the shrinkage of the brain and all the other elements. So cognition, memory, executive function, they all could be affected with multiple sclerosis as well. So as you appreciate, there is the vast variety of the symptoms that could be presented with multiple sclerosis.
A variety of symptoms that are often confused with other diseases.
Some of them you absolutely do. So for that reason, one of the key factors about in diagnosis of multiple sclerosis is to rule out those possibilities, your other what we call differential diagnosis. So what we do in our clinics is that we try to rule out some of the other conditions that could masquerade multiple sclerosis, which could present with similar symptoms before the final diagnosis of MS is made.
A lot of people in the general public confuse MS with a lot of other diseases, right?
In some cases, they do. One of the most notorious ones that MS has been confused with, because maybe it's the acronym part of it is different. MS sometimes get misdiagnosed with muscular dystrophy, for example, which is the disease of the muscle problem in children. That is, you know, Jerry's kids' disease. That is completely a separate disease and has no relation to multiple sclerosis.
Okay, so it's MS kids, not MD.
It's MS population, not MD, right.
And the S part is sclerosis.
Correct.
Can you tell us more about
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So the term multiple sclerosis in Latin means multiple areas of hardening.
Okay.
Where that terminology came from, unfortunately, is that because before the turn of the century, the only way that the formal and full diagnosis of MS was made was at autopsies. Because there was no MRIs available, so you can actually look at the lesions.
Sure.
And whatever radiological techniques we had available was not sensitive enough. And obviously, we normally don't open up the brain of the patients just to see what's going on unless we're dealing with tumors and other things.
Sure.
So at that time, when they would do the autopsy of some of these patients, they would see these patchy areas which are calcified and hardened. So for that reason, the term multiple sclerosis, or in French they call it sclerosis en placo, means that existence of the multiple areas which are hardened.
And Doctor, you have been incredibly illuminating. I wish we had another 3 hours to spend.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you so much for being on the show and for answering so many questions. Again, HogueHealthRadio.net is where you can go for more information on Dr. Bhandari and his work. Please visit HogueHospital.org. This is Deborah Howell for Hogue Health Radio. Thanks so much for listening. Have yourself a wonderful day and a beautiful weekend.